Track 4. Paul enjoys a chat with Tim Shepherd, former physiotherapist for Norwich City Footballers at Carrow Road, and discovers what Tim's weekly job entailed throughout the football season, as well as during the summer break. Well, listeners, here I am sitting with Tim Shepherd, the former physio at Norwich City Football Club, and his delightful sun lounger here, and just having a little chat. Tim, I don't really know what a physio at Norwich City means. Can you tell me a bit more about what you did?
Well, that's probably two of us, actually, Paul. But that's, I came down from the NHS, from working in the hospitals in Bolton in 1980. Mm-hmm. I stayed at the football club till 2001. So the physiotherapist in those days was very much a sort of one-man band. And I remember in those early days, we'd no ice machine for putting on ailments and treatments and using ice as a therapy.
Right.
And my children had, you know, we had those towel in nappies. And when nappies were being discarded, my wife would give them a really good over-the-top heat with them. And then she would reconstruct them into a folding bag. I would then take those to the club and would have a block of ice in a plastic tub in a freezer. And I would, my first job of the day was to smash up this ice into small fragments, put it in these terry toweling bags that had held other things apart from ice in previous days, to make an ice bag.
That's brilliant.
So that sort of thing went on then.
Those basically, are the
days. Yeah, exactly. And they were very much a case of treating the ongoing injuries of players started off in pre-season training, so you'd see the ailments then, try and prevent them as much as possible with guidance where they were overtraining or inappropriate footwear, things like that, or misguided enthusiasm of some coaches trying to do inappropriate exercises, and education of that, delicately put. So you were looking after ailments from prevention, but also then doing the treatments to try and get them back as soon as possible.
Sure, sure.
Pre-season was important. So then you were very much a case of seeing the patient, the players with their treatments sort of first thing in the morning till mid-morning.
Right.
Then go up to the training ground and supervise exercises that they could do within the limitations of their injury. Mm-hmm. So therefore you're having some that were hobbling on crutches maybe, to the other extreme where you were looking to sort of push them on and say, now you're okay now and get training. So it was a wide spectrum of management there where you were looking at ones that you were nursing and almost stopping them from exercising to prevent them getting worse because their enthusiasm to get back.
Yeah.
And then the other ones you're trying to push on and say, right, there you go. And that was pleasing then.
Did that cause one or two problems with personalities? Because some of them probably did want to get back earlier, and probably managers wanted them to be playing sooner. Were problems that way?
Yes, that was a difficult one. Sometimes you were getting misguided enthusiasm by some players who thought they were fitter than they were, and you had to hold them back. Mm. The manager and the coach wanted them too early, and I understood that. So it was educating both parties, actually.
Mm.
So you were sort of frowned upon in some ways. Oh, blimey physio, stopping them this, stopping doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be misguided to go back prematurely because they'd be out for even longer.
Yeah.
So it was very much a challenge at times. But hopefully, you know, you earn your spurs and respect and then your opinion goes with greater gravity.
And on match days, were you always there? Home and away.
Yeah, home and away.
With a magic sponge.
Yes. And I'm not going to talk about that because, you know, Magic Circle says that you can't talk about that. It's very prestigious piece of equipment. But so I was there really working. My week would start on a Sunday morning. We're looking at the ailments from the previous day.
Right.
Then your treatments were Monday morning, then up to Trouse, and then that was repeated every afternoon with treatments at the ground again.
Yeah.
And that was 5 days a week.
Right.
Match day, you were then doing the match, home or away. You were either travelling to the game or it was at Carrow Road, in on Sunday again. So 7 days a week.
And right.
I think there was one day my wife at the end of the season, she said, now I've kept a diary. You have been at the football club every day. Some days not so long, I'd say on a Sunday. every day from the 1st of July till the 17th of May. And I thought, yes, I see your point. But that's it. That's what the physios did.
Yeah.
In those days, you were sort of your one-man band, and you did everything, really.
So in your time, did it advance such that you started having other assistants, or just was it still just you?
I would say for three quarters of the time. Then I had a very good help from a chap called Keith Creamer, who sadly is no longer with us, but he was a great assistant and help to me, because I felt that, you know, I was going off midweek to a game. Say we were playing in West Brom midweek, you'd go Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
So the players weren't getting seen Tuesday afternoon, all day Wednesday. And I wasn't fit for much till a little while on Thursday morning when I got back.
Yeah.
So he then took over when I was away, because I felt it was important that just because you were injured didn't mean to say you weren't inconvenienced or you weren't treated when I was absent.
Right.
Because I wanted players to be back fitter, and you did have the odd player who probably didn't want to be fit anyway.
Right.
So it meant that if he thought he was going to have a day off or a cushy time, right, when I was away, I didn't want that.
No.
So you wanted them to make sure they were in working hard as they could. And that's what Keith's presence created. So that was very helpful.
Right. And were there players who were really difficult? I mean, I'm not necessarily asking you to name names, although I'm sure our listeners would love to hear.
Obviously, from a privacy point of view, then I can't. But I would say in 21 years, there were probably four players who wanted to be footballers but didn't want to play football.
Really? So they wanted the sort of the kudos of being a footballer and the pay?
Yes, exactly, but you know, they didn't have that really good, strong drive to be successful players, and they subsequently didn't.
Right.
Because you know, you could tell the people that really, like Steve Bruce and Dave Watson,
yeah.
I mean, they put, and Duncan Forbes, they would put their head where you wouldn't put your foot.
Yeah.
Their attitude was just fantastic.
Right.
And then you get the other sort of delicate flowers who've got to be managed differently, but that was the art of management of not only players when they're fit, but managers players when they're injured.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly the players that were getting in their early 30s who were injured, thinking, well, you know, how long have I got in this game?
Yeah.
Then it becomes difficult. And you could see there was almost like a 30-year-old itis came in,
right,
of end-of-career-itis, named as well, where you felt there was a level of circumspection in them and reticence. But the vast majority were absolutely terrific and driven and just wanted to play.
Yeah, sure. And what about managers? Were there, your relationship with a manager must be, from their point of view, really important.
Yes, it is. It's that mutual respect, really, that you know, I could trust them, they could trust me. And then you really wanted to make sure that I was giving the right treatments and the right advice.
Mm.
Therefore, you build up that respect, like you would in any career. But it was a sensitive issue, because not only, and certainly in the latter years, the invasion of media, social media, it was having an effect on what you could say, what you couldn't say, and you've got to be very delicate.
Right.
And educating journalists, educating players, you know, how to say no.
Yeah.
And there's a delicate art to that, you know.
Yes, yeah,
it's a bit like you asking questions, and if I do a TV or radio show, you know, the really top-class journalists will have a pause and they'll leave a vacuum.
And they're supposed to do that now.
And your top-class skills will come to the fore in a moment, Paul, I'm sure. But you know, you stop. I mean, one of the greatest things about sports journalism and sort of delicacy of broadcasting was John Arlott, and he was asked, how do you tell the really good journalists who are sort of working in sport?
Mm.
And he said, the art of a sports journalist or broadcaster is the one who speaks as if he was speaking to a blind man who once used to be able to see.
Yeah.
Talking to the blind man who used to be able to see.
Yeah.
Now, I think that paints a wonderful picture, because the blind man, he knows the cricket field, he knows the rugby pitch, he knows the football pitch, he knows Carrow Road.
Mm.
So therefore, he can then relate to the broadcaster's description of edge of the penalty box or the 22-yard line and stuff like that. And I think that makes them a great broadcaster. So his words like that have never left me in relation to sort of respect of certain journalists like Peter Jones in football. You know, there's no better than Radio Norfolk commentary in the football with Chris Gorham. He's superb. It's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And those skills I'm sort of witnessing today from you, you know, in what you're trying to achieve for the benefit of your 400 listeners.
Well, I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that particular John Orlock comment, you know, that very clearly. So, when you retired, you still feel an affinity for Norwich City?
Yes, I mean, I moved down here. I was very grateful of all the football clubs I could have joined. Opportunity came out from working in the NHS, and a friend of mine was a professional footballer in Burnley, and I used to watch some of his games, and then he rang me up one day and he said, Tim, I heard on the grapevine, because you've met the physios at the clubs I've worked at, there was a job at Norwich going. So he said, you ought to go. So I thought, went a long way, so what? You know, I'm not bothered about that. And I think I've been very fortunate that that opportunity, it was Norwich compared with some of the clubs that I've ventured to over the years. You know,
I won't ask you to name names.
But when I look back and think I've done 100,000 miles just going to away games in this country and over 1,000 matches, which recognised by the Football League, which was a great honour to do that. So I'm very grateful it was Norfolk, and it was Norwich and in Norfolk, and I ended up being the sort of classic victim of a sort of graveyard of ambition and staying here. But I think of all the counties to go to, I was very lucky it was Norwich, because I've been happy to have stayed.
Good indeed. And in your retirement, I know that you're still pursuing sport yourself.
Yes, well, I'm a great sports fan of most things. I mean, I wouldn't go quite as far as sort of the sports the players would bet on raindrops dropping down the side of a coach and things like that. But but my great interest is in cricket, really, first and foremost, rugby, football. I follow, obviously, Norwich, I'm a season ticket holder there, and obviously follow the great interest in my first club at Bolton Wanderers, where I'm from. And I was a youth player there, but didn't quite make it, and then I made a mischief of my knee, and then that's how I got into physiotherapy. But other sports and other things, I love going walking up in the Lake District, and then I've been on the committee for the Lord's Taverners charity, helping them. And then my other passion is sort of wildlife and sort of making barn owl boxes for the community of the barn owls in Norfolk.
Yeah, splendid.
Which I really enjoy. So I've got a visit coming up with an expert from the Hawk and Owl Trust, and he and I are going to visit all the boxes that I've put up.
How many are we talking about?
Oh, half a dozen so far. But I've got, in fact, they're spreading far and wide now, because my brother was up from Bristol a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And he was talking about the barn owls that feels in the back of his house on the edge of Bristol. So I'm three quarters of the way finishing one now for him, and I shall take it down to Bristol in a few weeks.
Right. Well, look, Tim, it's been really great to have a chat with you. Thank you very much for giving us some of your time. I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy listening.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.